Conservation sits at the heart of everything the National Trust does. That includes caring for precious landscapes, protecting historical treasures, and creating the conditions for millions of people to get out into a thriving natural world. Director of Land and Nature Harry Bowell and Director of Access and Conservation John Orner Ornstein explore what conservation means to our charity in the 21st century and how it's adapting, as it always has, to today's opportunities and challenges. It's read by Glenn McCready.
When the National Trust was created, 130 years ago, co-founder Octavia Hill was already thinking about the ways the Trust would need to respond to future unknown challenges. "When I am gone," she said, "I hope my friends will not try to carry out any special system or to follow blindly in the track which I have trodden. New circumstances require various efforts, and it is the spirit, not the dead form, that should be perpetuated." When founding the National Trust in 1895, Octavia Hill and her co-conspirators Canon Hardwick Rawnsley and Sir Robert Hunter were focused on preserving the countryside and heritage sites threatened by the industrialization of the Victorian era. But even then, the visionaries understood the scale of change that decades and centuries would bring for their fledgling organization, even if they could not foresee exactly what the coming challenges would be. The three founders might not have anticipated two world wars unfolding in the first half of the 20th century, but the course they'd set meant the Trust had the confidence to expand its focus to preserve the country houses which came under threat during the interwar economic decline. The Trust established the 1937 Country Houses Scheme, meaning estates such as Blickling in Norfolk and Petworth in West Sussex could be rescued and their interiors, collections, gardens, parkland and stories preserved for future generations. In the 1960s, after public concern about the loss of unspoiled coastline to development, the Trust shifted its conservation focus once again by launching the Neptune Coastline Campaign. Its aim was to raise funds to buy and conserve swathes of land along the coast to ensure public access for all. Today, over 890 miles, or 1,430 kilometres, of UK coastline is protected by the Trust on behalf of the nation, from the White Cliffs of Dover in Kent to Giant's Causeway in County Antrim. Now the Trust is rising to the current twin challenges of climate change and the decline in nature, which has seen a decline in species abundance of 19% in the UK since 1970, while also focusing on the Trust's original mission of ensuring everyone has the chance to access green spaces, whoever they are and wherever they live. As the Trust continues along the track that Octavia Hill set out, we know that, along with good stewardship of the places in our care, the Trust also has to respond to the challenges, opportunities, and careful management of inevitable change. As directors for Access and Conservation and Land and Nature, we share responsibility for helping to decide how the National Trust looks after everything entrusted to its care, from land to artwork. Conservation is often an act of renewal, whether it's restoring habitats, reviving skills and stories, or giving places new purpose. It's about creating value now and for the future, ensuring that nature, beauty, and history can continue to enrich lives. Part of that purpose is finding ways to make trust places and collections, to paraphrase William Morris, whose southeast London Red House is in trust care, both used and useful. We are focusing on how places can be part of people's lives, learned from and loved, today and for the future. One place where this philosophy comes to life is Seton Delaval Hall in Northumberland, where the stories of the flamboyant Gay Delaval family bring the past into the present. The hall's collection has been recently reimagined to better tell their story, restoring the drama and theatricality the family was known for. Visitors can enjoy performances in the historic hall, explore playful, hands-on exhibitions of new creative work, such as the giant Christmas bauble soon to be hanging in the entrance hall, and take part in activities including toddler gardening clubs and school storytelling sessions. Community groups also use the grounds for events, making it a place where heritage is not only preserved, but actively used and enjoyed. But used and useful might look a little different when talking about the natural environment. There, the concept mostly refers to the kind of access people are able to enjoy. It's about how we bring amazing nature to people's lives through paths and trails and vistas. But useful could also be used to describe something like functioning blanket bog in the Peak District in Derbyshire. When it's well maintained, this bog can hold water like a sponge to reduce the risk of flooding and provide clean drinking water, as well as trapping carbon, which can reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We absolutely think about that as the benefit served to people. Understanding how places can be used and useful also means recognizing that people are at the heart of conservation. It's about amplifying stories and understanding the relative significance of places and things and interpreting meaning. Conservation today is a shared endeavor, one that thrives on collaboration, creativity, and community. We want lots of people to be part of the endeavor with us and to help us make decisions about what we do. We'd like our work to be a co-curation with partners and interested communities. This sort of collaborative spirit was brought to life at Nostell in West Yorkshire, when a conservation dilemma became a shared experience. Faced with a decision whether or not to repair the mechanism of a historic clock made by John Harrison, famous for solving the problem of measuring longitude, the conservation team had to weigh the benefits of restoring it to working order against the loss of Harrison's original handmade engineering. Rather than decide alone, they turned to visitors for their thoughts. An exhibition invited people into the decision-making process, sparking thoughtful responses as the countdown ticked toward the clock's final tock. In the end, the property took the decision to keep all of the parts intact, with the clock still being able to be wound on special occasions, such as Harrison's birthday or when the clocks change. This was a powerful example of how involving people in conservation can deepen understanding and connection to our shared heritage. A similar story of collaboration and creativity is unfolding at Castlefield Viaduct in Manchester. Once a disused Victorian railway line, the Grade 2 listed viaduct has been transformed into a nature-rich green space in the heart of the city, thanks to a partnership between the Trust, local partners and communities. It's a great example of new use, new creativity, new planting and new community involvement. But caring for places also means responding to the world around them. Today, the biggest threat is nature loss and the changing climate. The State of Nature Report, first published in 2013 and republished and updated every 3 years or so since, brings together research from conservation groups to show how wildlife and habitats are faring across the UK. These reports have been the clearest sign yet of just how much nature is struggling. Each one has shown the situation worsening, and they've made it clear that we need to act with greater pace and scale if we are to help nature recover. That's why the Trust's nature conservation work today is about looking ahead, restoring habitats, adapting to new conditions, and making thoughtful choices about where and how we act and with whom we work. At Goldrill Beck in the Lake District, this meant working with partners to undo historic changes to the river. It had been straightened into a canal in the Victorian era, which had increased flooding for the village downstream, including devastating damage in the wake of Storm Desmond in 2015. So, after years of careful consideration, in part due to the archaeological significance of the surrounding valley, in 2021, work began to reconnect a mile of the river with its natural floodplain. By causing the river to meander once more, the project helped the landscape function more naturally and support richer wildlife. The difference has been dramatic. Letting the river return to its natural course created valuable wetland habitat and allowed sediment to settle naturally within the floodplain. Just as importantly, the next time another major storm hit, the village didn't flood. According to the 1907 Act of Parliament that brought the trust legally into being, its full name is the National Trust for Places of Historic Interest or Natural Beauty. And the Act charges us with promoting their permanent preservation. Today, our understanding of what that philosophy means in practice is evolving. Genuine permanent preservation is an impossible thing to do. Our modern thinking is about the careful management of change. The world around us is constantly evolving, and therefore our approach also needs to evolve. For example, at Dinas Dinche, a coastal hill fort in Gwynedd, the Trust is responding to the reality of coastal erosion gradually claiming the site's earthworks and buried archaeology. Rather than trying and failing to hold back the tide in perpetuity, the Trust has turned the focus to capturing knowledge, sharing stories, and encouraging people to visit before the inevitable loss. Local communities, schools, and young people have all taken part in conservation work on site, and, in a break from tradition, the remains of a prehistoric roundhouse, uncovered during excavation, were left exposed for visitors to explore. Digital storytelling now brings the site's 3,000-year history to life, helping people connect with its past while acknowledging its changing future. It's a powerful example of how conservation can adapt with care and still deliver lasting public benefit. What the nation sees as important or worth protecting can also change over time, shaped by culture, community, and how people connect with the place. After all, we didn't truly know that one of the most significant parts of the National Trust collection was the Sycamore Gap tree until it was cut down. The tree, which stood beside Hadrian's Wall in Northumberland for nearly 200 years, was felled in an act of vandalism in 2023. The public response to its loss was immediate and deeply emotional. People shared stories of scattering ashes beneath its branches, of marriage proposals made under its canopy, and of family walks and holidays marked by a photo at the tree's base. In the months that followed the tree's felling, the Trust launched a creative and community-led response. Saplings grown from the tree's seeds are being gifted to individuals and communities across the UK through the Trees of Hope initiative. Each one will be planted in a place where it can carry forward its own story of connection, memory, and renewal. It's a powerful reminder that significance isn't fixed, it's shaped by how people feel. No one alive today can foresee which items in the Trust's extensive collections will be considered its most significant by the end of the next 130 years. The one thing we must do is make sure we are putting the right plans in place to care for the collections and places and the stories they hold for future generations, as Octavia and her co-founders did for us.
As a member, your support has made so many vital conservation projects possible, from protecting and regenerating wildlife and nature to restoring precious history. If you'd like to do even more to help ensure future generations can benefit from nature, beauty, and history forever, please consider volunteering, helping to plant trees, or donating to one of our appeals at nationaltrust.org.uk/support-us. Thank you.